Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Vibrational medicine, along with alternative therapies, can mean total body wellness for you. This is Good Vibrations. Catch the wave to better health with Lynn Waldrop. Vibrational medicine encompasses many modalities: sound, color, light, magnets, and more. You'll learn how to use these proven concepts to stimulate muscles, organs, and bones to their natural state of resonance. Now, here's your host, Lynn Waldrop.
Welcome back to Good Vibrations, guys. I'm so happy to be here this week. I want to send a shout out to Madison, Wisconsin. I was there for Memorial Weekend this weekend doing an Access Consciousness 3-day body class, and I fell in love with Madison, Wisconsin. It was a wonderful, wonderful trip. The weather was beautiful. The food was magnificent. So I just want to say thank you to everyone there. And I have a body class coming up here in Georgia, in Atlanta next week, and one in Mexico coming up in a couple weeks. So if anyone out there speaks Spanish and hasn't had the opportunity to take something like that because of the language barrier, feel free to come. We have a translator and a Spanish translated manual this time. So very excited about that. So today we're continuing our quest through Access Consciousness Land. And we have Ann Maxwell, who is a licensed clinical social worker. She's a registered play therapy supervisor and an Access Consciousness certified facilitator, but she's kind of the leader of what we call the X-Men. So welcome today, Ann.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show. Yeah, this is awesome.
And my daughter and I saw Ann speaking, and actually she was really just asking questions. She wasn't like the keynote speaker or anything, but it was in an Access class, and we just fell in love with her. It was so amazing to see the questions that she was bringing up about kids and the labels that they are having put on them every day today in our society. So that's really what today's show is about, is labels. So what kinds of things come up for you all the time, Ann?
Well, one of the things, you know, I'm so happy to be out here talking about kids, because it seems as if I've been doing this for 20 plus years. I've been a therapist working with kids and families for over 20 years in a variety of settings, and the trainings that I had were the best that were available at the time, and I am so grateful to all the people under whom I studied and all of that. And yet I always knew that there was really something more out there, and I was never very comfortable with the idea that there was something wrong with these kids, because when they were with me by myself and it was just the two of us, there was all this magic and sparkle that happened. And one of the things, I worked initially at a residential treatment center, which is really like the end of the road for a lot of kids, the end of the road being either jail or the state psych hospitals or psych lockups. But these were kids who were unable to function either out in the community in any kind of a home, whether it was their biological family's home or foster home or group home or anything like that, and or were unable to function in school. And so it was a really intense program. And I just always knew that under the right circumstances, because I could present the kids with the right circumstances in the therapy sessions with me, that they could make different choices and that so much more was possible for them, but they came with these incredible labels and all this medication and all this stuff. And I'm a seeker. I have been all my life, I think. And when I discovered Access Consciousness three and a half years ago, things really started to change hugely in my practice. And it's not that the kids didn't get better and the families didn't shift and change over the course of the years before. I found Access, But what actually happened was that the shift and change happened so much more quickly after I found Access. And what I realized is all those years, the shifts and change really happened as a result of the connection that I had with the kids. It was that sparkle and that magic and that knowing that there was nothing wrong with them, that there was really nothing wrong with them, that I didn't judge them, and it's almost like I acknowledged them for where they were and gave them permission to do whatever it was that they wanted to do or to choose whatever they wanted to choose. And back in the day, that was hard because the system was so set against anything like that, and it was so wedded to the idea of diagnoses and labels and medication. So I'm kind of going on, but on and on and on, which is what I tend to do when I talk about kids. But what if there's actually nothing wrong with kids, right? What if there's nothing wrong with these kids? And what if they're making choices for whatever reason, not cognitive choices, but certainly energetic choices? And what if we can begin to ask questions about them rather than functioning from this space of, oh, there's something wrong with them because they don't fit into this category, or there's something wrong with him because he can't sit still, or there's something wrong with him because she can't remember blah, 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 right? Or there's something wrong with her because she's not speaking, right? What if none of that is true?
So, you know, to break it down for a parent, because I hear a lot of parents in these situations feel so overwhelmed, you know, with hearing this from the school, from the teachers, you know, from the physicians and things like that. Where do you kind of start with them? Do you start with the child? Do you start with the parents?
Great question. What I do in my practice is when parents call me, the way I like to work is I like to meet with parents first. And what I say to them is that way you can vet me and decide whether this is something that you would actually like to pursue or not. Because even though parents come in initially thinking that they don't know very much about anything that's going on, they're so confused and feeling so hopeless. After I spend some time with them, we all come to acknowledge the fact that they actually know a huge amount about their kids and about themselves and about their families and about what's going on. And I'm not the kind of therapist that comes up with like answers for people. And so what I'm all about is tapping people into knowing what they actually do know. So back to your question about how do I function, I love meeting with parents first. And even if they're fighting and in conflict, if they can't be in the room together at the same time, I'll meet with them separately. But it gives me a sense of what it's like to be in the child's shoes, to be in the room with the parents at the same time. And not that the parents are to blame or at fault for anything, but just, you know, it just gives me a sense about like more of what their child's life is like. And then I meet with the kids.
And how often do the kids' picture of what their family life is like their parents' picture of what their family life is like?
Well, it's interesting. I one of the first things that happens is with the kids, I put the kids in charge in the play therapy room. And I tell parents that I'm going to do that. And what I say to the kids is when you're in here, you're the boss, right? I'm not going to ever make you do stuff you don't want to do or talk about stuff you don't want to talk about. When you're in here, you're in charge. And they swing around, and especially the little ones, look at their parents with these huge grins on their faces. It's like, yes, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that I do that is because I really want to find out what their world is like. And as it turns out, their worlds can be very different, but to a certain extent, they sync up because that's the pattern that they formed over the space of their relationship or over the course of their time together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that just opens up a whole nother set of questions like whose job is what and all that kind of stuff in the family, which is really fun to check out and to see. But from the kids' perspective, life is a lot more, it's easier for them to be happy and joyful, even though a lot of times they don't have permission to be that. And that, I get that. I see that all the time, over and over and over again.
So what's the main group of kids, the diagnoses that come to you?
I probably, the trauma, depression, mood disorders, a lot of anxiety. And the thing about like these kids come in with all these diagnoses, and so many of the symptoms look so much alike that oftentimes anxiety and ADHD, for example, get sort of intermixed or interspersed. But I don't tend to function from diagnoses and from the labels. I really tap into, one of the underlying principles of my practice is that behavior is a form of communication. And so if that's true, is that true for you, Lynn, that behavior is a form of communication, right?
I totally agree.
Yeah. And so then my question is, so then what is she saying when she cries inconsolably and doesn't want to come out of her room? Or what's he saying when he just explodes in rage when somebody asks him, you know, somebody tells him to do something? Or what is this? Like, what's going on? It's one of the awesome questions in ACCESS. It's a basic one. Like, what is this? Right?
Do you find that when you ask some of the kids, or maybe even all of them, I don't know what percentage that would be, when you ask them really what is this that's happening here, they get, I call it the little grinchy smile, you know, like
they
the,
do.
They know exactly.
They totally do. There was one, okay, can I tell a story?
Sure.
So there was one, he was five, and he was in so much trouble at daycare and at home. And his mom is awesome. I just adore her. She, as a teenager, I knew her when I worked at the residential treatment center. She was actually there, and even though she wasn't one of my kids per se, I knew the circumstances under which she lived. And she had a lot of substance abuse stuff. And so when she came back to, she came to see me, she had, by that point, four kids by four different men. She had been clean and sober for, I think, 2 years, 2.5 years. And she was she's in a beautician school, and she was headed towards graduation, and she was also working. And her mom was really supportive and was, you know, provided a lot of daycare for the kids. And the two of them sort of raised the kids together. But the emphasis, I mean, she was so clear that these were her kids and she wanted to raise them. And so I paint that picture of her. And I just adored her spirit, and I'm crazy about her. But anyway, her 5-year-old, who was her third child, was really her primary relationship. And so what's a primary relationship? Oftentimes when parents are divorced or going through difficulties or whatever, one of the children will become that parent's primary relationship, which means it's almost like they take on the job or the role of comforting the parent, keeping track of them emotionally, making sure that they're really okay. They're totally tuned into their parents to the expense of themselves, right? They miss out on a lot of their sort of normal development because they're so focused on their parent and making sure that they're doing a good job. And that becomes problematic because parents don't always do what kids want them to do, right?
You know, and when I first heard that really scared me because I was a single mom for a long time. I think my youngest son was, I think he was 9 when I got married. And I didn't realize how much I had made him a primary relationship like that.
Right. Well, and what if there's nothing wrong with that, right? It's just acknowledging it and then asking, how's that working for you guys? Is it still working? And if it's not, because that's what this story is all about, right? It was the undoing of that and the sort of releasing of that.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, so he'd been acting out. He was in preschool heading to kindergarten, or maybe he was in kindergarten, I can't remember, but it was a half-day program and then daycare and then at mom's and at grandma's, and he was acting out everywhere. And so she brought him in. The two of them were sitting on the couch together, and he was all over her. He was in her face, and he was pawing at her shoulders, and she was, you know, pushing him away, and she was so irritated by him, and he was just nuts. And I said, so what's up? And I asked some questions about their relationship together, and I can't remember the sequence of it, but at one point I said to him, is it your job? Oh, I said to him, so what's going on with you guys? And like in terms of living, and the mom said, well, my boyfriend's going to be moving in with me and in with us. And I looked at him and I said, what do you know about that? And he stopped breathing. Like you always know with kids when you hit it, because they stop mm-hmm. breathing, everything just freezes and his eyes got bigger than his head. And he looked at me and he said, Mikey's going to leave my mommy and she's going to be very sad.
Wow.
And at which point she burst into tears.
Wow.
And right. And I said to him, and so you've known this and your mom, and you've been trying to tell your mom and she hasn't listened to you, right? And he said, yes. And he still wasn't breathing. It's like nobody was breathing in the room. And I said to him, can we ask your mom if she can take care of herself now? You've done such an amazing job of taking care of her. Can we ask her if she can take care of herself now? And he said, yes. And so I did. And she's crying. And she said, yeah, I can. And I said, can you thank him for doing such an amazing job? And she said, yes. And she did. And I, you know, the energy in the room totally shifted. All this density and heaviness and irritation and anger and like the gunk, it all cleared out. And by the end of the session, they were sitting on the couch next to each other, not even touching. And she was looking down at him and he was looking up at her, and there was this space between them. And it was so cool because it was just, they shifted into that space of magic again between the two of them where they really were close and they totally enjoyed each other's company, right? And there's nothing wrong with that at all. And so that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids always seem to know.
They do seem to know. And if you ask them, it's like, what if you can ask your kids, what do you know? What do you know about that?
And be willing to receive the answer.
Yeah, and when they give you an answer, they tell you, don't talk them out of it, right? Just acknowledge it. Thank you for letting me know. And don't defend yourself and justify whatever it is going on, right? Just like taking the information, oh, huh. And then maybe ask a question like, and what else do you know? And see where they go.
So when you go through a process like that and then they leave your office, I mean, does the child literally stop at that point with the acting out, or is this something that has to continue? Can it be that simple?
It's that simple. She called me back two weeks later and she said, Mikey's not moving in and Frankie's doing awesome. Thank you.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So,
yeah.
And I know you don't go by the diagnosis, but what was the child's diagnosis? Was it ADHD because he was bouncing off the walls?
ADHD because he's bouncing off the walls. And
and meanwhile, he was just trying to tell mom something.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And probably some anxiety too, separation anxiety. A lot of times kids who have, who are their one of their parents' primary relationships get given the diagnosis of separation anxiety because they cling and they don't want to let go of their parents, right? They don't want to let them out of their sights because they don't want them to do something stupid. Right?
So the child becomes a caretaker at a very young age.
Yeah, an emotional and sort of psychic caretaker.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and what's so really so cool. What's really the difference then between, like, I mean, we call them X-Men, and I'm sure everybody wants to know why we call them X-Men, but to me it kind of falls with this question. So what's really the difference between these kind of kids and then the regular kids that are out there?
Well, you know, the X-Men kids is a label that we use in Access to describe the kids that are known to be, quote, on the spectrum, the ADD, ADHD, OCD, autism, dyslexia kind of spectrum. And those are kids whose minds function very differently from the minds of other people, right? They think differently. They are different. They have different capacities. And it's a huge population that's made to feel incredibly wrong. And so you asked me, the next largest category of kids in my practice are these kids.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to go on our break and we're going to come back and talk more about the difference here. So we'll be back in just a minute.
How would you like to live a phenomenal life? If you aren't currently living the life you desire, contact us for a phenomenal life session at www.myphenomenallife.net. Finances, relationships, sex, business, weight issues, and more. 1 hour can change your life. Call 678-745-VIBE. That's 678-745-8423. Or contact us on the web at www.myphenomenallife.net. Why not start living the life you've always dreamed of now? What's stopping you? Visit myphenomenallife.net or call us at 678-745-VIBE. Again, that's 678-745-8423.
The tools of vibrational medicine are easy and effective. Go to www.tuningforkwarehouse.com and purchase all of your therapy equipment. We have tuning forks, color therapy kits, Richway Biomat and alkaline water devices, Sima 750 sound therapy instruments, and more. We also offer classes in the use of many of the products, whether you are just beginning or are a seasoned professional. Check us out at www.tuningforkwarehouse.com. We're here to supply tools for your optimal health.
Want to get away to views that will take your breath away? Visit Paradise in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Come see what we're talking about at www.stcroixdreamvacation.com, where there's plenty of sun and fun, snorkeling, scuba diving, jet skis, golf, the most breathtaking sunsets, and the rich history of Christiansted. It's time to de-stress and feel the relaxation of island time. Visit stcroixdreamvacation.com. That's S-T-C-R-O-I-X, dreamvacation.com. Kick back, relax, and feel the ah. Make your first stop, StCroixDreamVacation.com.
Are you tired of feeling stressed out, can't sleep, and in pain? Learn how to use vibrational medicine as your new first aid kit. While healthcare costs are climbing and there are more and more pharmaceutical side effects, there is another choice. Contact Lynn Waldrop at www.soundcolorandlightforlife.com and see how 1 hour can change your life. Depression, gout, Parkinson's, sciatica, neuropathy, surgery recovery, tennis elbow, ACL tears. You can have a quicker recovery and live the active life you've always wanted to. Visit SoundColorAndLightForLife.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Good Vibrations with Lynn Waldrop. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call 1-866-472-5792. Again, that's 1-866-472-5792. If you'd rather send an email, our email address is linsgoodvibes@att.net. Now, back to Good Vibrations. Catch the wave to better health.
Welcome back, everybody. And today we're continuing our series on Access Consciousness, and we have Ann Maxwell, we're talking about the X-Men, which are your kids in this reality, in this plane right now. How many kids are different? They just learn faster, process things different, and that's what we're talking about right now. Or what are some of the main differences? All these kids that they require having the TV blaring, the radio blaring, and headphones on, and they need all that just to do their homework, and it drives parents crazy.
Well, and for the kids on the spectrum, the ADD, ADHD, OCD, autism, dyslexia spectrum, there's a huge emphasis on focusing and paying attention and concentrating and doing one thing at a time and finish something first before you start something else and like all that stuff that as somebody who has pretty major ADHD, it drove me crazy when I was growing up, right? Because I couldn't. You can't function like that. You can't just do one thing at a time. And come to find out, one of the great reliefs, I was hugely relieved when in an Access class, Gary Douglas, who's the founder of Access, said, kids like this need to be doing like several things at the same time, and they go crazy if they're just told to do one thing. It's like, oh my God, that is so true. And so what I encourage parents to do whose kids have ADD, ADHD especially, is like having 40 TV stations going on in your head at the same time, all blaring with no remote and no capacity to switch stations to get them all on the same thing. And so kids like that do much better when there's a lot of stimulation rather than when there's no stimulation or where they have a lot of choices. So it's easier for them to do three different homework assignments at the same time with the TV on while they're texting their friends than it is just to do one assignment only. They cannot function like that.
And that's a huge tip for parents to me just there, because I mean, I can remember doing that even with my own kids sometimes, where it was like, you know, can't you just sit down and do one thing at one time?
Right.
And I don't know why I even said that, because I was never the kid that could sit down and do one thing
right.
at one time. So it's
right.
kind of like, duh.
Well, and the cool thing about this, you know, one of the other principles that I have in my practice is that people do the best they can with the information they have available to them at the time. And so the best information that you and I had growing up was that we were supposed to sit down and focus and concentrate and do one thing at a time, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, and what's so funny is I never heard anybody put dyslexia in this category before, and I was terribly dyslexic when I was a kid.
Right.
And believe it or not, I had a doctor, and I'm 48 years old. I had a doctor way back then at some point said to me, and I can hear it as plain as day, how can you turn that to your advantage, which is something I hear Gary tell me all
You're
the time.
Kidding. Oh, my God.
And you know what's funny about that is I never saw it as a limitation. In fact, somehow my brain rewired itself or whatever you want to call it. But like now, if you give me a set of numbers, it's locked in there.
Right.
Because it was so hard for me in the beginning to keep numbers straight. They were what jumped all over the page for me.
Uh-huh.
And now it's like as soon as you give me numbers, it's bam, I just have it.
Right. Were you the kind that could figure out stuff much more quickly than the way they explained it to you?
Oh, yeah.
The math examples and stuff like that was...
Yep.
Yeah, me too. And I had these secret ways of doing stuff, and I still do. I can come up with answers like instantly, bam, and people
well,
just...
And even reading, like you would see them jump all over the page, but now it's almost like you can just look at a page, like they talk about autism, you know, and handing them a whole page at a time rather than trying to make them, you know, read every letter and every word, you know. I mean, it was almost to that degree where I would just look at a page and I would know what the page said.
Right.
If I tried to read it word for word, it was ridiculous. I couldn't do it.
Right, exactly. So what was your first language, Lynn?
Well, on this planet, it was English.
Well, and what if it was actually energy, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Right? And so what if the language of energy works, is at lightning speed, just like you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And the language of English or German or anything is really slow, right?
Yep.
And so for kids who function at the speed of light, asking them to use their words makes them crazy.
I find that even in facilitating classes, I can't get the words out.
Right? They just spill out. I mean, I think a lot of kids get diagnosed with bipolar disorder or some of the mood disorders when they do what you were just talking about. They can't get the words out fast enough. It's like that.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what the symptom is. It's because I don't function from the DSM, the diagnostic manual, anymore. But there's uh-huh. something about when you can't get your words out fast enough. You're like that kind of talking.
So
racing.
What kind of things can you tell parents then? What is your biggest advice to them if they have kids that have been diagnosed or they've observed these different things happening with their kids? What's some of the things that they can just choose at home right now and try and see if it will actually work with their family?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I recommend to parents is to ask questions. Like we were talking about that at the beginning of the show. What is this? Like, what's going on with him right now? And ask questions of the kids. Like, what do you require? There's something, okay, one of the things that I say to kids and to parents when they come into my office is, what if, I'm racing right now. All right, so when we were growing up, isn't it true that we were given basically two choices, either to agree with everything that was going on or to resist and react to it and just like push back and become the rebel, right? But
yep.
But somehow that we were always either the cause or the effect, that we were always in, that there was a cause and effect principle out there. Well, what if that's actually not true? What if there's another way to be, which is to give yourself permission to be who you are? And I get, and parents look at me, you know, and I can see the thoughts racing through their heads about how much trouble their kids are in and all that kind of stuff. And what I say to them is, what if you can give your kids permission to be who they are, and we can give them the tools that they need so that they can tap into the worlds of other people and give them whatever information those other people require so that your kids can be seen and be heard in a way that makes it easier on them and makes it easier on everybody around them. But what if they can be seen and be heard in a way where they don't have to give themselves up in the process, where they can still be true to who they are, right?
Agreed.
Yeah, and so that's, and so to parents, what if that's actually true for your kids? What if it's true for you, and what if it's true for your kids? What if you can give yourself permission to be who you are and not fault yourself for not having the, quote, perfect kids, or the kids that all the experts say are the ones that are going to be the biggest successes and all that kind of stuff? Like, what if you can just toss out whatever stuff the experts tell you that don't actually work for you, either you as a parent or you as a being, as a person, and give yourself permission to be who you are and to begin to function from there. And, you know, if you have to talk school talk to the teachers, but you don't have to become it. You can just, like, do it to get whatever it is that you want. It's almost like a form of manipulation. But what if that's what the world, how the world functions anyway? And what if we, let's, like, back to that question, what if we can use that to our advantage, right?
Yeah. Cool. And a lot of teachers only teach, and not to put any blame there, but they only teach to a particular style of learning.
Right.
And so not every teacher is going to work for every kid. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, I do. And another one of the other things that I ask parents to is to check out the teachers and check out the schools. They'll say, well, yeah, I checked it out online. It's like, go down there, walk in the doors, right? You know your child probably better than anybody else on the planet, except possibly your child. But you certainly know your child better than I do or than other people do. And you'll know when you walk in there, and you meet people and talk to people, or you'll know when you meet the teacher or you go into the classroom whether this is going to be a fit for your child or not. And what if what's going to be a fit for one of your children may not be a fit for the other five or the other one or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's almost like stepping out of all the preconceived notions and all the answers and the need to get it right and have it be... Yeah, it's like the need to have it right.
That's so important in this world, though. They're not going to get into college or get into the right college if they don't have it right, right?
Right.
And that's what most parents are worried about.
So not true. I mean, I went to three different high schools, and the third high school I went to a private prep school in Boston for 4 years from the fifth to the eighth grade, and then I went to the local regional high school. And then I went to France for 2 years to a Huguenot boarding school in central France. And I came back and I went to a really exclusive private school that was really, really competitive and really hard to get into. And there was no way that I ever should have been admitted and allowed to go there. And the principal was so curious to find out about me, just given my past, that he accepted me, right? Just like that, bang. Like, what if that's how the world...
What magic can you create, Anne?
Right? Exactly. I mean, what if that's how the world functions when we don't have, like, this rigid need to fit into the matrix and to follow the programs and that kind of stuff? And what if that's what the kids are telling us? It's like, don't do that anymore, right? We don't have to function like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So... one of the things that you talk about is for the parents to be space in order to help the kids. What does that mean? How can the parents do that?
So can we do an exercise that
sure.
Expanding out? So one of the things that happens with, one of the things that a friend of mine told me one time, he said to me, you think with your body, right? And what if a lot of people actually do, quote, think with their body? What if that's a way of describing a sensitivity to the energy that's going on, like a capacity to know what's going on around you? And when you are in that space, it's really easy for people to be around you. It's a space where you don't have any judgment of anybody else, where you're just at ease. It's a peaceful space to be. And so for kids who are in trouble a lot, who don't fit in, who are told all day long at school, either directly or indirectly, that there's something wrong with them, or they need to, if they could only do this a little bit better, then they might fit in, even though they never do, because they never can. It is really amazingly soothing and helpful for kids to be in the presence of somebody who doesn't judge them. And that's what I, so when I say to parents, what if you can be space for them? It's the space of no judgment, the space of, like, total allowance, where you actually don't have a point of view about whatever choice your child is making, because kids have choice, right? I mean, they can choose to throw a tantrum or not. They can choose to do their homework or not. I had a, so here's an example of me being spaced with a 5-year-old, or I think he's 6 now, whose parents are just locked in, I think, eternal bloody combat, even though they've been divorced for like 2 or 3 years. They're still in the courts. They spend more money on lawyers and court costs than almost anybody that I've ever met. And he goes back and forth between the homes, and his dad is a bully and is pretty difficult, pretty tough. And his mom puts him, like feels bad for her son and wants to protect him from her dad, from his dad. And the truth of the matter is that that's the way the courts have set it up. He is going to have to go back and forth. And so I said to him, he said, my daddy, he presents himself as a victim, which is how his mom is portraying him. And he said, my daddy told me to get ready to go to school. And then he yelled at me, And I said, so what happened? How come he was yelling at you? And he said, because I made my bed. And I said, oh, were you making your bed when he wanted you to get in the car? And he said, yeah. And I said, so what do you know about your dad? And I asked him a whole bunch of questions, like, what do you know about your dad? And he said, well, I said, does your dad get angry a lot? He said, yeah. And I said, so if your dad tells you to do something and you wait before you get it done, is that going to make him mad? And he said, yeah. And it shifted him out of the space of being the victim of this mean dad and into the space of having full awareness of the energy that was being created by the choices he was making. And I had no point of view about whether he chose to make his dad mad or not, whether he chose to make his bed or not, whether he chose to do any of that. But that's what I'm talking about being space, right? That space of no judgment. Because when you're the space of no judgment, then your kids can tap into what it is that they're creating by choosing whatever it is they're choosing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I have all my kids have moved back in with me, including boyfriends. And I'm like, wow, okay, maybe I want to get into judgment. to get them to go and do their own thing.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because the space of allowance is not the space of being a doormat at all. So when stuff isn't working for you, one of my favorite lines is, you know what, this isn't working for me.
Yep.
What's another way that we can be with this, right?
Yep.
So just because your child is choosing to throw a tantrum doesn't mean that you have to sit there and listen to it. And being space doesn't mean being abused or being bullied or being put down or being any of that. It doesn't mean succumbing to that kind of stuff. Being space is being in total allowance of what they choose, and also saying, if it doesn't work for you, you know what, this isn't working for me. What's another way we can be with this?
All right. So you just brought up a question for me. So, you know, when we grew up, you didn't dare act out when you were, you know, at Walmart, whatever it was back in our day, or when you went to a restaurant with your parents and things like that, or walking through the airport, you know, you were expected to be on your best behavior, right?
Right.
But today that doesn't happen. And parents just sit there and the kids just literally go nuts. And you see all these people, you know, looking and all the judgment and all the whatever is going on, you know, a lot of intensities are going on from everybody but the parents. The parents almost seem completely desensitized in those situations.
Right.
So what is it in those situations that, you know, if you're out in public, are parents just supposed to allow the child to, you know, have the tantrum or whatever? And is there anything that people that are sitting around can be or do to change that situation?
Well, it depends on, it's almost like to tap into the energy of it. I mean, I can just hear all the parents who are going to hear this radio show who have kids who are on the severe end of the spectrum, whose kids, you know, have a really hard time functioning in a, quote, polite manner, like in a restaurant and stuff like that. You know, kids mm-hmm. who have repetitive behaviors, who talk like this, right, who talk in a monotone and a loud tone of voice, who are desensitized socially, like that kind of stuff. And I hear, and there's terrible judgment that's thrown at them.
I'm sure, yeah.
I see it. I saw it in the airport this weekend. They're supposed to. And then there are kids that are out of control, who are stepping on, you know, the space of everybody else around for like whatever reason. But what if it's really, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you do, Lynn. I mean, I go back to the question, like, how's that working for you? Is it working for you to have a table full of rowdy kids next to you so you can't hear the conversation of the person that you're at dinner with? Like, I was in a class in Chicago, and there was a almost two-year-old, who's just awesome. But one of the things he was doing was he was screaming to get his mom's attention, and his mom was getting her bars run, and his mom had just sort of had it. And I was a lot of space with him, and he was great because he provided a lot of the people in the room the chance to shift into a different space with those kinds of behaviors. But at one point, he was yelling so loud, I walked over to him, and I said, "Hey, Luke, can you keep it down a little bit? This isn't working for me right now. When you yell like that, I can't hear myself talk, and the people that I'm talking to can't hear me at all." And he looked at me, and he drew in a huge breath, and I thought, oh, man, here we go. And he let out a howl of rage. He screamed so loud, I thought the paint was going to peel off the walls. And I thought, well, that will really work well, right? And I walked back over to where I was sitting, and I kept on. So what I did was I literally pushed down all the barriers, and I just let the scream go right through me. I had no point of view about it at all. And I kept on asking a question like, okay, so now what? Like, what is this, and what can I do with this? Can I change it? How can I change it? And all I kept on coming back to was just be space, just be space, just let it go. And he stopped screaming, and then he screamed again for about another 3.5 seconds, and then he stopped, and he didn't do it for the whole rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Right? And so just to say, you know what, this isn't working for me. Is there another way you can be with this? And to talk to them as if they're, you know, as if they're not objects. I mean, to not scream at them, but to say, you know what, you guys, this isn't working. Can you, like, keep it down?
Yeah, I mean, I asked it because it, you know, a similar situation happened in the Chicago airport, and just the judgment that everybody, I mean, there's just hundreds of people because it was raining and they had closed down and flights are stranded and everybody's uptight. And this one child was just screaming beyond belief.
Well, and what if the child was picking up all the energy of everybody freaking out, right? And just couldn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so the other thing I do is I flow energy to those kids, which is just, it's almost like you be the space for them. It's like, it's okay. I get it. It's okay. You're going to get home. Your mom's going to settle down. Your dad's going to quit yelling. Everything's going to be all right. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love it. I love it because I'm sure that people that have children with some of these, you know, it's difficult for them in public. Even if they're the space, they just reap all the other judgments of everybody around them.
Right, exactly. And so if you talked about judgment, about receiving judgment, should we talk about that?
I'm not sure.
So Gary Douglas talks about, founder of Access Consciousness, talks about one of his wives who used to scream and yell at him and really just throw these major tantrums. And Gary said he did everything from walk away, to scream back, to ignore, to, I mean, just everything in the book, all the strategies and interventions and all that kind of stuff. And he said none of it worked until he became completely vulnerable and pushed down his barriers. And so physically what that means, how I describe that, or the sensation that happens to me when I push down my barriers, is like I open up all my pores, and I really literally just push down any resistance or any pushback that I may have. And I let the judgment go right through me, the screaming or the yelling or whatever. And when you don't resist and react to anybody who's screaming and yelling at you, it takes the wind out of their sails. Gary said that her tantrums went from 2 to 3 hours down to 2 to 3 minutes when he, I mean, he just like let it go right through. And so it's a fun kind of thing to practice with. And when you can be in that space and let people's judgments go right through you, you get to giggle a little bit. It's like, because the thing about judgment is that anytime somebody judges you, it's because they're either being it or doing it, right? Or they've been it or done it. So somebody's judgment about you is not about you. It's actually about them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have time for one quick story?
Yeah.
So that 10-year-old came into my office and he was upset, and I said, "What's up?" And he said, "So-and-so told me I look like a hippo." Well, he's a pretty skinny guy, and I started to laugh, and I didn't laugh. I wasn't laughing at him, but I just kind of giggled, and I said, "Can I show you a picture of a hippo?" And he goes, "No." I said, "Okay. So tell me what this other kid looked like. Is he kind of skinny, or is he kind of medium, or is he kind of chunky?" And he leans towards me in the chair, and he goes, "He's really chunky." And I said, "Right? So who's the hippo? You or him, right?" But I love that. I love that. It's like the hippo story. Who's the hippo, right?
That's right. So if you want to reach Ann, she's at www.childfamilyplaytherapy.com.
Correct.
And it's Ann with an E, A-N-N-E, at childfamilyplaytherapy.com. So tell them where they can find you. Ann does a lot of traveling, but she also does her private session. So
yes,
where in the world is Ann?
Where in the world is Ann? Right now, in this 10 seconds, I'm in Denver, Colorado, which is where I live and which is where I have my private practice. And I also do, I've been invited to go all around the world. So in next week, I'm going to be in Boston doing Barres Foundation Level 1 classes for access, and then also some kid classes and some body process classes in between. And then at the end of June, the beginning of July, I'm going to be in Australia, in Brisbane, and in Mooloolaba, and then in doing 10 days of classes there in both cities. And then in August, I'm going to India.
Oh, how fun.
Which is awesome, to Mumbai and to Bangalore for probably what's looking like now 2.5 weeks, maybe longer. And then August, and then in September, I've been invited to the Netherlands also to do a lot of the kid classes. And I also do classes for what I call healing practitioners, but anybody who's a therapist of any kind, like a massage therapist or an occupational therapist or speech language or play therapist or psychotherapist, medical doctor, dietitian, like anybody who is a professional in the healing capacity who has clients. It's a new class that I do on this called Healing Practitioners, a New Paradigm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So your kid classes now, are there any prerequisites? Do they have to have already been introduced to Access Consciousness, or is it for anybody?
It's for anybody. Kid classes are for anybody. And my signature kid class is called All About Kids, and it's for parents and educators. And then I have another signature class is called All For Kids, which is actually for kids. And I do classes I break them up into either two or three age groups, depending on numbers and topics and stuff like that.
Very cool.
But little ones, middle-sized ones, and then older ones.
So let's talk a little bit about autism.
Cool.
Because I know that's a huge one out there as well, since we've kind of covered the ADD and ADHD. So what is your take on autism? What do you do when you have a child that comes to you?
My take on autism is that people who have autism who are on the spectrum, they think really, really, really differently, and they function at the speed of light. What happens with, they have a capacity to perceive energy and to perceive actually what's going on, and what happens a lot of times is they then take on those energies and they think that they're actually theirs, but people with autism function much more from perceiving than they do from thinking or feeling or having emotions. And so one of the things to never do to somebody who has autism is to ask them how they feel, because they can't tap into that. They don't get it. They're not built like that. From this reality's perspective, they're socially inept or awkward. There's a whole spectrum, and I think a lot of people have some autistic tendencies or symptoms on a very mild scale, and then it goes all the way from there to the really profound, the kids who don't talk. And I don't work with that population. That population, I think, gets a lot of services in the school system, and then there are other groups that work with them as well. But kids at that end of the spectrum they just function really differently, and so there are different ways that you can be with them. You can ask them questions, and the questions that you ask them are really designed to stir up the energy of what's actually going on. But kids with autism tend to be pretty far away. So, for example, so when they're far away and it's almost like you can't find them, you can ask them, where are you? And can you come here for a second? And energetically, you'll get it, even if they don't turn around and look at you, even if they don't make eye contact. But if you ask them, where are you, oftentimes they will. They'll make eye contact with you. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, and isn't that, again, another expectation in this reality is, and I, you know, I didn't even realize I have this until you said it. There are times even with my husband, it doesn't look at me when I'm talking to him, so I automatically assume he's not paying attention.
Right. So what if that's so not true?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally not true. So kids with autism function at lightning speed, and so when you ask them to slow down by using their words and talking slowly and that kind of stuff, it enrages them. So what if that's what a lot of those tantrums are about, is just sheer and utter frustration at people either willfully or unwillfully, like not getting it about who they are and where they are and trying to make them wrong and trying to make them fit in when they don't want any part of that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing about eye contact, remember that question, like, what was your first language? It's energy. You don't need eye contact when you communicate energetically.
Mm-mm.
And what if we communicate energetically anyway? Like, you think about times in your home when things are going really well, and think about times in your home when things are, like, kind of rocky. Like, sometimes mornings are difficult for families to get everybody up and out the door and breakfast fed and homework in the bags and, you know, in the car on time so nobody's late, right? Like that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
The alarm goes off in the morning in those households, and it's the energy of, ah, right, that comes up instantly.
Yeah.
Right? And
hurry,
so,
hurry, 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 hurry.
Yeah, and we're going to be late. We're going to, right? And so in order to shift that, what if one of my, Dane here, who's a business partner of Gary Douglas, is just one of my favorite people in the whole world, and one of the things that he says is you can change what you say and you can change what you do. You can change how you say it and you can change how you do it. But if you don't change whatever it is that's driving it underneath it, whatever the energy of it is, does anything ever really change, right? So mm-hmm. like with tough mornings or whatever, you can do rewards and punishments and you can yell and scream or you can throw your arms up in despair. You can ignore. You can do all that kind of stuff. But if whatever the energy of it is underneath it doesn't shift, it never really changes, right? And so when you ask questions, the questions are really designed to, like, what is it? What is it that's going on in the mornings here? Like, what do I know about that? Those are awesome questions to ask. And they'll give you the awareness of what it is that's actually going on, right?
Yeah.
And there's
and I'll ask the question all the time, how can I make this fun for me?
Yes, awesome, cool. And how can I make this fun for me? And what do I know that I'm not acknowledging?
Yeah.
What do I know that could actually change all of this?
So many times we just want it our way, whereas if you just stop and ask the kind of questions you're talking about, it can just totally shift everything. And it's like, okay, so what if A doesn't happen before B and that doesn't happen before C? What if today, you know, the kids chose to do C first? Does it really matter?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And who came up with all those rules anyway? That's what I want to know.
I agree.
Because they should get fired.
There we go. I love it. Well,
right?
Anne, I'm so grateful for you being on the show today. Hopefully we gave good information out to a lot of parents who I know have been suffering instead of turning around and turning this to their advantage and their kids' advantage. So I love that. And I'm so appreciative for you and all the work that you do.
Thank you so much, Lynn, and I really appreciate it. And for my schedule, you guys, if you go to the Access Consciousness website and click on the facilitators link and click on my name, Anne, A-N-N-E Maxwell, M-A-X-W-E-L-L. That's where I have all these classes that we've been talking about. And I also have them on my website. So two different places to find them.
And that website, again, is www.childfamilyplaytherapy.com. Thank you so, so much, Anne. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lynn. And thank you. Yeah, this has been wonderful. You are awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. And guys, we will see you next week. We have Blossom Benedict on with Right Voice for You. And I hope you guys all have a very healthy week.
Thank you again for joining us for Good Vibrations. Catch the wave to better health. We hope you'll tune in again next week, Tuesday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, for another edition with your host, Lynn Waldrop, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a good and healthy week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.